VOA 1.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Kenyan court temporarily bans the government from deploying hundreds of police in a UN-approved mission in Haiti.
Obviously, this is a deplorable situation. It is a tragedy. Obviously, what has happened already, the death of and wounding of so many innocent civilians on both sides, is absolutely horrific.
The death toll in both Israel and Gaza continues to climb as fighting continues for a third day.
These elections are going to be very much challenging. There are going to be sporadic tensions, sporadic violence, but we think that those violence may be intensive, but may not widespread.
And security concerns in Liberia following the deaths of at least two people in pre-election violence. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The death toll in both Israel and Gaza continues to climb as fighting continues for a third day. Israel has announced a complete siege of Gaza, meaning it will cut off food, water, and electricity. Meanwhile, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and Turkish counterpart Tayyip Erdogan called on Hamas and Israel to immediately end violence and protect civilians. Kenneth Pollack is a specialist in Middle Eastern political affairs and a senior fellow at the American Institute, Enterprise Institute. Pollack formerly served as the National Security Council. He described the situation as deplorable and a tragedy.
Obviously, this is a deplorable situation. It is a tragedy. Obviously, what has happened already, the death of and wounding of so many innocent civilians on both sides, is absolutely horrific. It's just unclear that any of this is going to produce a better outcome. My fear is that this is going to be just another bloody round in an endless conflict between Israel and Palestinians with no real end in sight.
Yeah, the reaction around the world has been varied, as you have heard. Some have condemned Hamas, while others lay the blame on the lack of progress on the two-state solution. Does that help solve this conflict?
I don't know that any of the international reaction is terribly helpful at all. In fact, in some ways, it can be problematic because each side looks to the sympathetic responses it gets and not to the criticism. I will say that while I think we can certainly empathize with the plight of the Palestinian people, I think we can deplore the circumstances in which they've had to endure for the past 50 or 75 years. By the same token, nothing justifies the deliberate killing of innocent civilians, right? The deliberate killing by Hamas of Israeli children, women, the elderly, the kidnapping of the same. Nothing, no just war tradition, no tradition of righteous war anywhere on earth justifies that.
Today, Hamas is reported to have said they are open to discussion of a truce with Israel. In your opinion, is that possible?
I think it unlikely at this early stage. Hamas has accomplished exactly what it wanted to accomplish. So, of course, it wants a ceasefire. Of course, it wants to end things right here. It wants to pocket its winnings and not suffer the inevitable consequences, which, frankly, it knew it was going to suffer when it tried this. But I can't imagine that it's going to happen. I have to imagine that the Israelis will demand that they use their military to try to rescue their innocent hostages, and that they try to inflict such damage on Hamas that Hamas cannot believe that it profited from this attack, that it cannot imagine that trying again to kill innocent Israelis is going to somehow benefit them. And I cannot imagine that anyone, not any friend of Israel's, not any enemy of Israel's, is likely to stop that. So I see Hamas's call for a truce as being utterly cynical, and I doubt that it's going to have any impact.
Today, the leader of Saudi Arabia and the president of Egypt had a discussion, and in their statement they said they are calling for reason to prevail. What's the likelihood, in your opinion, that the other actors may be drawn into this conflict?
Well, I don't think that too many of them are going to be drawn into it in a beneficial way, in a way that's likely to bring about an end to the conflict anytime soon. As I said, Hamas has inflicted a terrible blow on Israel, which is absolutely repugnant. And I think that the Israelis are going to demand to be able to try to free their hostages and restore their deterrent. And you can like that or dislike it. I think that it is simply the reality. And I doubt that anyone is going to be able to do much about that. I think that the real risk of countries being drawn inadvertently into this conflict are other combatants, in particular, Iran and Hezbollah in Lebanon. I think that there is a greater danger that either or both of them will choose to intervene in the conflict. I think that if Israel does a tremendous amount of damage to Hamas in Gaza, Iran and or Hezbollah might be tempted to try to intervene, to attack Israel, to try to prevent Israel from doing any more damage to their allies in Hamas. I think if Israel does very poorly, if they suffer lots of casualties in Gaza, that too might encourage either Hezbollah and or Iran to join in, believing that Israel is weak and that this is an opportunity to do even greater damage. So I think that those are the worst dangers of other countries being involved. But I will also say that I actually think that they're actually quite low. Both Iran and Hezbollah have postured, they have threatened, they've made some symbolic attacks, at least Hezbollah has. But I think that they all recognize that Israel can also do tremendous damage to them. I don't think either of them wants to suffer at the hands of the Israeli military. And so I don't think it's terribly likely that either of them would get involved unless Israel chose to attack them, which, again, I also think is unlikely, certainly at this stage of the conflict.
That's Kenneth Pollack, a specialist in Middle Eastern political affairs and a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He's spoken with me earlier from Washington. And VOA's Carol Van Damme spoke with Robert McCall, Government Affairs Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. McCall criticized U.S. President Joe Biden's statement of support for Israel following Saturday's attack.
Well, all reasonable people do want this violence to stop, and every human life has value, whether it's Palestinian or Israeli. But the only way to permanently stop this violence is to end the occupation. Because I believe, similar to Ukraine, Americans and the international community would like to side with the oppressed, not the oppressor. The international community's refusal to hold the radical far-right Israeli apartheid government accountable for its escalating human rights abuses and theft of Palestinian land has only emboldened more abuses and, you know, led to this violence. It had not happened in a vacuum, but had been led up to this point.
Well, as you point out, Palestinian-Israeli relations have deteriorated further, even further after the hard right government of Prime Minister Netanyahu took over. So give us a little glimpse of what has led up to this point and what led up to this attack.
The Israeli government has used American taxpayer dollars to murder Palestinian-American journalists in the last year, leave a beaten and gagged elderly Palestinian for dead, expanded illegal settlements, enabled wanton settler violence, which, by the way, targeted American Palestinians taking shelter, calling on the U.S. government for protection, which they did not get. We've also seen the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the killings of hundreds of Palestinians, including many children, every year. We've also seen that Gaza, since Hamas was elected, I think in 2008, it's been an open-air prison where its borders have been closed and Israel controls access to water, electricity, and medical aid.
And as you know, that water and electricity and other emergency kind of supplies have been cut off now by Israel to Gaza. Do you have any inside contacts of how things are today in Gaza?
It's very hard in America to get a clear picture of what is happening. You know, we're relying on Palestinian Americans in contact with their relatives to let us know. But Closing off the electricity to Gaza is part of a plan to silence voices in Gaza so that the world doesn't know what is going on. This violence needs to end, though. Indiscriminate violence, bombing of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, is only going to lead to a tragic loss of life and create new barriers for a lasting solution. Again, I think what's happening in Gaza is a dire situation, and that this is kind of a last solution, and it's a tragic and violent and deadly one. But here we are. Now we have to figure out how, as peacemakers, we can address the core roots and concerns of this violence to make sure that this never happens again.
You allude to other attacks that were carried out by Israeli forces on Palestinians, but this was clearly a Hamas attack on Israelis inside Israel. Does your group condemn the attack that happened on Saturday?
Again, every human life has value, whether it's Palestinian or Israeli. We condemn any violence against civilians. Somehow, though, the world has neglected to address the core concerns of the people of Gaza for 17 years. They would rather have peace with no solution. They would rather further the status quo. Even our own president has turned a blind eye to the two-state solution and just let Israel further its settlements without any solution in sight.
That's Robert McCaw, Government Affairs Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. He was speaking to VOA's Carl Van Damme in Washington. In Liberia, security concerns have been raised following the deaths of at least two people in pre-election violence. Political watchers say campaign messaging has deepened political divisions and are calling on the national police to be more proactive during today's presidential and legislative elections. Senanu Todd reports from the capital, Monrovia.
On the streets of Monrovia, university students chant, "We want peace. Liberia is our only country. We want peace." They hand out peace-branded handbills to commuters, urging the voters to desist from violence as they head to the country's presidential and legislative elections. Grace Yayane is a student leader at the University of Liberia. She says the deaths of two people due to electoral violence in Lofa County on September 29th is alarming.
In Lofa, there was a clash and where people lost their lives. There was a trickle of violence. And you also found out that history has proven that sometimes in Liberia, our elections are very violent. So we also learning from the past and trying to conscientize our citizens, and the students are saying no to electoral violence.
Liberia's Peace Building Office develops policies for conflict resolution. They say data collected around the country shows that campaign messaging has deepened political divides. Edward Mulba is the executive director. He says six of Liberia's 15 counties are hotspots for potential violence.
These elections are going to be very much challenging. There are going to be sporadic tensions, so sporadic violence, but we think that those violence may be intensive, but may not widespread.
This is the first time Liberia is running a national election without the support of international partners, including the United Nations and the ECOWAS security forces, since the civil war ended in 2003. ECOWAS is the Economic Community of West African States. The National Elections Commission, in its first autonomous national vote, has introduced some reforms, including a new biometric voter system. Melba and the Peace Building Office say there hasn't been enough education on these new reforms.
So, and this is the very first time, even though we made some mistakes along the road, but those mistakes are not being seen in the light of, in the eyes of our people. They see the mistake as deliberate on the part of the National Election Commission to the advantage of the regime. So we see that as potential for violence. No?
Oscar Blow is the chairperson for the Elections Coordinating Committee, a network of civil society organizations that observe elections in Liberia. He says the absence of international security partners will put a strain on police.
And we know the facts are there, the police, the internal security, they're faced with enormous challenges from limited human resource capacity, limited logistics, uniform issue. issue of finances to deploy across the country.
Liberia's National Police say they are committed to maintaining peace during and after the elections. Moses Carter is a police spokesperson.
We are adequately ready to provide security to these elections. This is a commitment we've made from the time we spoke to heads of political parties. And we've assured them of their safeties and the safety of all Liberians.
Liberians Tuesday will elect 73 legislators, 15 senators, and a president. 19 candidates are attempting to unseat President George Weah. Sana Anutol for VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
The students of Kofi Annan say no more electoral violence.
A Kenyan court on Monday issued a temporary order barring the government from deploying hundreds of police personnel in Haiti in a UN-approved mission aimed at helping the Caribbean nation tackle rampant gang violence. Reuters reports the order is valid until October 24th. It follows a petition jointly filed by one of the opposition political parties and two Kenyans who say the deployment of the police officers outside the East African country is illegal. To find out more about this order and what it means for the UN-approved mission, I reached Paul Mwangi, a Kenyan lawyer.
Well, the order that has been issued is in the nature of a conservatory order. And what happens is, under the Kenyan constitution, when you file a constitutional petition and allege that it is possible that actions may be taken that might defeat the purpose of the petition, then the courts have power to issue what is today called a conservatory order, which conserves the situation so that it does not change while the court makes a decision on the petition.
So in this case, what has the government got to do?
What it means that now that a conservatory order has been issued is that there can be no further developments towards the issue of taking policemen to Haiti. The whole process has been stalled, and the government will have to wait for the court to decide whether they are right to give up the 1,000 police soldiers to the international mission or not. What the government can also do in these circumstances is that they can go back to court and before the judge and show that the conservatory order in this instance is not needed or is unfair, and can ask the court to vacate that order so that they can continue with the preparations.
Is there anything the government could have done before agreeing with the United Nations to deploy troops to Haiti to avoid this scenario?
Absolutely no way they would have prepared for this, because first, the constitutionality of the whole pledge is what is questioned. And one of the questions that will be answered is whether the government under the constitution can send policemen to another country. It is clear that we can be part of peace missions where it concerns the military. But the constitution, there seems to be vague when it comes to the police and whether the police can be given up for these missions. The second thing is that the Kenyan constitution is very strong on what is called public participation, and that before you make such momentous decisions as has been made by the government, that you must consult people, you must bring up the issue with the citizens, you must bring up the issue with the police themselves, and you must listen to them before you make this decision. One of the things that is being challenged is that this was what we sometimes in Kenya call a roadside declaration, that the president woke up one day and decided that he was going to dedicate Kenyan police for this mission. And the argument is that he has a constitutional duty to consult the people of Kenya before he makes such a decision.
How do you see this, it working it out?
The issue of public participation is likely to be the Achilles heel of this whole decision. Courts have ever since this constitution passed been very, very vehement on the need of public officials and state organs consulting people before they make decisions. In this instance, there is no record of the people of Kenya being consulted or members of the police service being consulted before a decision was made that you can dedicate the police to this. Because these are Kenyan lives that are at stake. Courts may view that it was necessary and it was important that the state should have first consulted with the people before dedicating policemen to this mission.
That's Paul Mwangi, a Kenyan lawyer. He spoke with me from Nairobi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impulga in Washington. In Sierra Leone, the main opposition party, All People's Congress, or APC, is expressing hope that talks to ease political tensions in the West African country will resolve their concerns about the recent general election. This after representatives of the country's international partners, including the African Union and the Commonwealth, arrive in the capital as part of preparations for the talks scheduled to begin next week. Sidi Yaha Tunis is a spokesperson of the opposition APC. He tells VOA's Peter Klote that the party will soon decide on the next steps forward after reviewing its decisions about boycotting parliament.
The APC is about to engage with the ruling SAPP as to how we discuss possible solutions to the political stalemate we have in the country at the moment through a dialogue that will be mediated by international organizations such as the Commonwealth, the AU, and the ECOWAS. And that is set to commence next week. The team is already in country, the advanced team, according to the Peace Commission, which is facilitating the dialogue process. And then they will engage with the APC and the SLPP separately on the 13th and the 14th. And then, of course, the dialogue itself will start the 16th through the 18th of October.
Some people are suggesting in Sierra Leone that perhaps it will be a good gesture, a sign of good faith, if the APC will tell its parliamentarians to go to parliament as talks is set to begin, in order to ensure that you are negotiating without preconditions.
I mean, several considerations are being given to, you know, so many things, but we also have to ensure that the key issues, the key demands are discussed with the aim of making sure we not only secure the future of the country, but to strengthen democracy as well, you know, rather than weakening it. So whereas we are getting overtures, we are getting suggestions, and people are making demands, we want to give the dialogue a chance so that we are able to discuss these issues frankly and sincerely in order for us to be able to solve this political stalemate we find ourselves faced with.
What are the expectations of the APC ahead of this much anticipated talks mediated by these international partners, including the Commonwealth and the African Union?
Well, we expect frank and sincere discussions around the issues that we have raised. And also, we expect to, you know, have key recommendations with timelines and implementation plans, you know, so that these talks will not just be like other talks that we have had in the past or whatever recommendations that we come out with.
That's Sidi Yahya Tunis, a spokesman with the Syrian opposition party APC. He spoke with VOA's Peter Klote. And that's it for this Wednesday, October 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impulga in Washington, wishing you a great day.